Kunjabi Hare. Gopi Janaba Laba Girid Varidari Gopi Janaba Laba Girid Varidari Yashoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana Jamuna Tira Vanachari Jai Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Jai Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Gopi Janaba Laba Girid Varidari Gopi Janaba Laba Girid Varidari Yashoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana Jamuna Tira Vanachari Jai Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Thank you.
Jayam Shivam Sarvadajakataya, Sisimadesi Bhakti Vedanta Samaraj and Prabhupada. Jayam Shivam Sarvadajakataya, Sisimad Bhakti Siddhanta Sasi Thakur, Srila Prabhupada. Gaura Premanandi. Tonight we're reading from Bhagavad Gita chapter 18, text number 6. Text number 6, chapter 18. Etanyapi tu karmani. Sangam chakcha palani cha kartavyani ti me partha nishtatang matam uttamam etanya pita karmani sangam chakcha palani cha Kartavyani ti me pata nishtatang matam uttamam. Etani, all these. Api, certainly. Tu, but. Karmani, activities. Sangam, association. Chakta, renouncing. Palani, results. Cha, also. Kartavyani, should be done as duty. Iti, thus. Me, my. Partha, O son of Pritha. Nishtitam, definite. Matam, opinion. Uttamam, the best. All these activities should be performed without attachment or any expectation of result. They should be performed as a matter of duty, O son of Pritha. That is my final opinion. Purport. Although all sacrifices are purifying, one should not expect any result by such performances. In other words, all sacrifices which are meant for material advancement in life should be given up. But sacrifices that purify one's existence and elevate one to the spiritual plane should not be stopped. Everything that leads to Krishna consciousness must be encouraged. In the Srimad Bhagavatam also, it is said that any activity which leads to devotional service to the Lord should be accepted. That is the highest criterion of religion. a devotee of the Lord should accept any kind of work, sacrifice, or charity which will help him in the discharge of devotional service to the Lord. Om Gyana Chimarandasya Gyananjana Shlokaya Chakshun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivastri Gaur Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. Krishna is saying here, Etanyapi Tukarmani, all these activities. Now, what activities is he referring to? It's very important for us to remember. Just like after class yesterday during the question session, one person was saying, well, what should we do then? Hearing all about the woes of material life, well, what are we supposed to do? So I reminded the person that we are discussing yajna, dana, tapa, karma, activities of sacrifice, charity, and austerity. That is what we are meant to do. And in today's verse, Krishna is referring back to those same activities of sacrifice, charity, and austerity. He's saying all those activities should be performed without attachment or any expectation of result. Now, does that mean you are meant to perform your purificatory processes of Krishna consciousness and not expect any kind of result? What actually is Krishna talking about here? He is talking about don't do sacrifice, charity, and austerity for material purposes. Don't expect a material result. The spiritual result of anything connected to Krishna will be there. So it's not that you just go along with blind faith and not know what your outcome will be. The whole of Bhagavad Gita is teaching you that if you perform anything for Krishna's pleasure, that the result will be eternally beneficial. So when Krishna says, don't expect any result, he is referring to dharma performed for material purposes. He goes on to instruct that these activities of sacrifice, charity, and austerity should be performed as a matter of duty. That means simply because these things must be done. This is what makes bhakti yoga very mystical. It's kind of hard for us sometimes to get ourselves in the consciousness of doing something just because it should be done, without expecting any kind of material result. The karmic mentality is so embedded in us, it's hard to separate ourselves from activities performed for material gain. It just seems natural that you act to benefit yourself materially. You act to please yourself, and you define yourself as an entity separate from Krishna. The influence of the external energy, Maya, makes it appear that this kind of activity for your own self-interest is natural. That's another reason why some people have difficulty with Krishna consciousness. They can't get over this idea that you do things for Krishna's pleasure. You do not try to please yourself. This seems a bit strange, because after all, you think, I'm existing. That much I know, that I exist. Now, what's wrong with trying to please myself? When we take up bhakti yoga, we are learning the art, science, culture, and technology of pleasing Krishna's senses. And the Lord is saying here, perform activities of Krishna consciousness in a way that is done out of duty. This must be done. Don't look for yourself. don't look for any material result. This is very mystical for us. That is why devotees are very hard to understand when seen by materialists. Material life means you're always thinking, how will I be pleased? How will I be satisfied? Now, when you first come to Krishna consciousness, naturally that might be on your mind. That, yeah, I'm going to come to Krishna consciousness because it's the best thing for me. I know I thought like that in the beginning. I thought, well, in my university days, I was known as a pleasure lover. So I began to think, if I'm really a pleasure lover, then I should be able to have pleasure that doesn't end. I was thinking like that as a non-devotee. But what kind of pleasure lover am I, and how can my reputation as a pleasure lover be intact when I have no idea of pleasure that has no beginning or end? So, with that kind of motivation, I approached Prabhupada's books. I wasn't so much thinking that I was suffering. I was thinking, the real goal of life is to enjoy. So what is the enjoyment that has no cessation? I've got to find that out. So that's how I approached Krishna consciousness. And I remember as a new bhakta, I was learning verses that I felt would keep me from venturing out to Maya. So there's one verse in Nectar Devotion which states that those who render devotional service are first-class experts in the matter of satisfying the self. I said, yeah, that's for me. That's where it's at. So I memorized that verse just to keep me fixed. And now it is true that serving Krishna is your self-interest. But in the beginning, you can't see that. There's a mystical step required that I'm serving Krishna, then automatically I'll be satisfied. It requires a mystical step of faith in the beginning until you get the realization, because for so many births and deaths, we have been addicted to trying to please ourselves. And it seems so natural, it seems so obvious that you have to look out for yourself. Now we take up bhakti yoga and we are trained to look after Krishna's pleasure. And in this way, we have to look away from our traditional ways of satisfying ourselves. And this is what can cause a little problem in bhakti, in our devotional service. We're going against lifetimes of tradition, our own tradition, and the tradition of society. Lifetimes. Now we are being trained to understand that if I simply satisfy Krishna, everything will be taken care of. I don't even have to worry about myself. Those of you who try this, you find out it's true. As you get older in Krishna consciousness, as you pass the 15, 20, 25 year mark, you'll be able to look back and see that those times when you acted simply for Krishna's pleasure were your happiest days. Even though there might have been some material difficulties, there might have been material inconveniences, there might have been austerities, still, you'll remember the flavor of serving Krishna just for Krishna's pleasure. You'll never forget that. Whereas, what you'll easily forget is the very insignificant flavor of happiness derived from trying to please yourself. Watch and see how easily you'll forget that. This is the amazing thing about Maya. It seems so meaningful to get your own pleasure for yourself, and something in you cries out for that. The illusory part of yourself cries out for that. Yes, for me. I've got to do something for me. Reminds me, when I was in England, one of my disciples, he's in her mid-40s, and she decided she wanted to marry a guy who was 30. So I told her that, why didn't you speak to some senior grihastha's householders before talking to me? They would easily tell you that, you know, this is not a wise idea. So you should have consulted with them before talking with me. Also, in that way, they would have broken the bad news to you, and I wouldn't have had to do it. This isn't going to make it. This isn't going to fly. So, I said, you know, this is, you know, by the time you're 55, this guy will be 40. There's no way this marriage is going to last. So anyone could have told you that. She told me, well, but, you know, I don't consider the age. I go for the person. And so I had to explain that when we arrange our life intelligently, we look at all factors, because it's not that marriage is a purely spiritual arrangement. It is the arrangement. It is a material arrangement meant for spiritual purposes, but it is a material arrangement. So this way I tried to dissuade her. And then I asked her, well, how did you get into all this anyway? What made you think that you should enter into such a situation without consulting anyone? She said, well, I just thought it's about time I did something for myself. I just thought it's about time, you know, I went and got something for me. Now, on the one hand, I was a bit shocked. On the other hand, I appreciated her honesty. Basically, what she was saying is that, you know, I've been serving Krishna for a few years now and, you know, doing everything for the Lord. And, you know, I just figured, you know, I'm 45, getting old soon. I mean, what about me? I got to grab something for myself. So this is a basic insecurity that devotees can feel sometimes. Maybe I'm missing out on me. Maybe I'm going to suffer because I didn't try to satisfy me. But as I was saying, the amazing thing is that the promise of illusory energy, the promise of Maya, that you're going to get such a powerful experience for yourself, is so empty, because even if you get that so-called powerful experience, in the future, you forget it so easily. It seems like it's going to be such a big thing. If I only get this for me, oh, how powerful it's going to be. Oh, how satisfying it's going to be. It's going to be a major event of my life when I get this for me. But then 10 or 20 years later, you look back and you can't remember that taste you were supposed to have gotten, because that taste is so insignificant. It's so paltry. But Maya makes it look like a big thing in your mind. When you get this, this is going to be it. When you taste this for yourself, you're really going to feel like you're alive. It's going to be a memorable event. That's the way the illusory energy makes things appear to you. That's how the illusory energy makes selfish desires and sense gratification appear to you. But I guarantee you, 10, 20 years later, you won't be able to remember the flavor that was supposed to be so great and so big. That's why we say it's Maya. It's not what it looks like it is. But any selfless service done for Krishna, you'll never forget that taste. Never. 20 years from now, you'll look back on your days of selfless devotional service, and the taste will be so prominent in your mind. Yes, I remember when I was part of the marathon. I remember when I did so much more service than I thought I could do. I remember rising early in the morning and rendering service throughout the day. That flavor will never diminish in your mind, as long as you are properly taking care of your devotional creeper. So Krishna knows what he's talking about when he says, perform activities without attachment or any expectation of result. Don't expect any material result, and you'll save yourself a lot of trouble. Okay, how do you get yourself out of this habit of expecting a material result? It takes training. It takes culture. That's why a smart devotee wants to be part of a culture that inspires selfless service to the Lord. That culture makes it easier. Otherwise, on your own, it can seem very daunting, very difficult. How can I act without expecting a result? How can I act without attachment? This is the greatest mysticism. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna Yogeshwara, the master of all mystics, is teaching the highest mystic yoga. How to even fight on a battlefield without attachment or expectation of result, and in doing so, render service to the Supreme Lord. This is the highest mysticism, as confirmed by the Lord at the end of the sixth chapter of the Gita. Yoginam api sarvesham madgatenam tadatmana shaddhavan bhajateyuma same yuktatamomata. Of all the yogis, the greatest one is the one who's abiding in transcendental loving service to me. That is Krishna's declaration. Now, what makes bhakti yoga what makes it look a little difficult is that it's hard to understand how even sweeping the floor for Krishna's pleasure or doing some menial task for Krishna's pleasure, it's hard to understand how those activities can bring the spiritual world to you. Because we've seen these activities done in material life, and we just have the feeling that it's no big deal. Sweeping the floor, or cooking, or sewing, or tending a shop. We've seen all this before. But what you haven't seen before is that flavor, that bhakti flavor, because your service is actually going to Krishna. That flavor, that experience, you've never had before. This is what makes bhakti yoga unique and mystical. Every devotee is being trained to be the highest mystic yogi. That's what's going on here. Don't think because we are not, doing breathing exercises and we are not, trying to bend a spoon with our mind. Don't think that there's no mysticism going on here. No, we are learning the highest mysticism as certified by Krishna in Bhagavad Gita. In this verse, he says, Nishchitam matam uttamam. This is my final opinion. Krishna is putting his personal stamp on the situation. This is my final opinion. This is the best way to act. Sometimes people get a little confused upon reading Bhagavad Gita. They say, Lord Krishna talks about so many things, karma yoga, jnana yoga, hatha yoga. What should we do? There's no confusion. Everything fits together very systematically. But anyway, even if you think there's confusion, you take the last thing that Krishna said. For example, if I say on Monday, do this, and on Tuesday I say something else, and then at the week's end, on Saturday, I say, this is the final thing, you do this. You take the last thing I said. So even if you think there's confusion in the Gita and Krishna's saying so many things, look for the last things he's saying, and that will emphasize his points. Here he's saying, Nishchitam matam uttamam. That is my final opinion. Act without any attachment or any expectation of material result. Act as a matter of duty. When we take up our Krishna conscious activities in that spirit, then we can enter into the mystical world of bhakti yoga, in which everything is done for Krishna's pleasure. That's why Krishna tells Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita, you can do your duty, but you're not entitled to the results. Victory or defeat is not your concern. Just be an instrument in this battle. This is very mystical. How a soldier can fight without concern for victory or defeat. Once you start applying this Bhagavad Gita in your daily life, Once you start trying to enter into the mystery of work done without attachment, without expectation of material result, then you'll start to feel this power of bhakti yoga. Then you'll start to perceive what's going on in Krishna consciousness. Therefore, it's very important that we take Bhagavad Gita very seriously. Try to apply it in our life. How can I do activities as a matter of duty? Because that is Krishna's final opinion. I should do things because they're for Krishna's pleasure. I have been appointed to discharge certain tasks for Krishna's pleasure. That is Krishna's final opinion that I should act in that way. So let me leave it at that. When you start consciously doing this, consciously thinking like this, then you can start to perceive the potencies of bhakti yoga. That is why the sages at Naimasaranya in Srimad Bhagavatam were very careful to question Sutta Goswami. The sages at Naimasaranya had gathered to perform a sacrifice, a yajna, for the purpose of helping them to understand what is the duty of people in the horrible age of Kali. They were clearing away all the obstacles in understanding Dharma for our sake. In this way, they directly asked Sutta Goswami, Bhurini Bhuri Karmani, Shotavyani Vibhagasa, Atat Sadam, Triyat Sadam, Samadita Manishaya. They said, Bhurini Bhuri Karmani. There's so many duties recommended in the Vedas. Shotavyani Vibhagasa. There's so many scriptures, Vedic scriptures, with different categories, different divisions, and they're all recommending so many different things. But Atat Sadam, Triyat Sadam, you are a sadhu, you're a sage. You please select the essential thing. Samadhita Manishaya. You deliberate on the situation and select the essence. Yinatma supersedity. What are we looking for? Tell us how to act so the self is satisfied. Atma prasidati. They're concerned for our behalf. The sages at Naimasaranya. They're asking questions. What can the people in this horrible age of Kali, this present degraded time, what can they do to benefit themselves? Especially now that the Lord, Lord Krishna, has departed from the ordinary vision of this world. He's gone. Real religion has gone with him. What are we going to do with the people who are going to take birth in Kali Yuga? What's the best thing they can do? The answer given by Sutta Goswami? Savai pumsam puro dharmo yato bhakti rokshite. The best thing for the people in Kali Yuga or any time to do is devotional service to the Lord without expecting any material gain. Simply, samsiddhi hari toshna, satisfied Lord Hari. That is the perfection of all activities. Work for the satisfaction of Krishna's senses. Bhakti yoga is bringing you to this exciting world of acting just for Krishna's pleasure. Maybe some of you have tried simply acting for your own pleasure. It gets boring after a while, doesn't it? How many of you have noticed that it gets boring just trying to satisfy yourself? Yeah. At first it seems exciting, doesn't it? I'm going to do this for me. I'm going to do that for me. I got so much money. I'm going to spend it on me. I'm going to get this for me. I'm going to buy that for me. I'm going to go there. I'm going to travel here. All for me. Maya really surcharges those expectations with great power. Yes, for you, your senses, your body, your mind. You really start to tingle with excitement. But it never turns out to be the satisfaction you expect. And gradually you find out, oh, I need to do something more to be happy. So even the most selfish person starts to look for someone else that he or she can do things for. Even the most selfish person starts looking, where can I be, how can I be a bit selfless? Yeah. Maybe, you know, the ladies start thinking, maybe I need a child to sacrifice for. The man starts thinking, I'm tired of running around, you know. Maybe I need a woman to tell me what to do and a family to, you know, to give all my money to. It's natural. People start thinking like that after a while. Because it gets boring just satisfying yourself. But what they don't understand is even when they attempt to establish relationships that are based on selflessness, still the same selfishness is there. It has to be there because you're thinking, I am this body, and the other person's the body. So even when you try to be selfless, still, you're acting within your extended conception of I am this body. You're treating others as extensions of your body. This is hard for most people to understand. Most people think that when you're performing mundane welfare work, that you are actually being selfless. We're not saying that no one should try to help anyone in any kind of material way, but we're just saying it's not very important. Because even in, I don't know if you've ever talked to persons who work for charities. I have. And they'll confess. They say, you know, the real reason why we like doing philanthropic work and charitable work is because you really feel good about yourself that you're helping others. And they say the greatest highlight of their year is the annual charity banquet, when you know all the, you know, the real hardworking charity people are called up on the stage and they're given a plaque. And this year we'd especially like to commend so and so who put in such an effort raising funds or such an effort helping unfortunate people. They all tell me this is the moment of their life. This is what makes them tick. Just to get that plaque, to get that recognition, to get that feeling that I'm recognized for doing good for others. Now, of course, some people get upset that we kind of poke at such behavior. But it's not that we're trying to disturb people. We're just trying to point out something very subtle, that even in activities of so-called selflessness, there are selfish desires. Now here we are in Krishna consciousness, trying to learn how to satisfy Krishna's senses without thinking of ourselves. This is a big job. How to have the conviction and the experience that if I satisfy Krishna, automatically I'll be satisfied. I won't be left out. It goes against all our logic, all our reason, all our past conditioning. It goes past the traditions of many, many births. It seems like, wait, it's quite obvious. If I'm going to be happy, I've got to please me. I've got to look out for me. Now we're being taught, think of Krishna's senses and automatically you'll be included. It seems a bit unnatural at first. And that's what causes a little difficulty in being Krishna conscious. You're stepping onto the mystical platform. But it is not blind faith. Krishna will teach you the science of bhakti yoga. He will show you that just by trying to satisfy his senses automatically, you are taken care of in a way you could never conceive of before. It's mystical in that the taste you get in return for serving Krishna, you could not speculate before. Even if there have been material difficulties while serving Krishna, still the spiritual taste you get is so satisfying that you'll easily tolerate so much material inconvenience just to get that taste of serving Krishna simply for Krishna's pleasure. Are there any questions? Yes? Lord Brahma explains this in the 10th canto of Bhagavatam. Yenye ravindaksha vamuktamaninas triyashta bhavat avishuddha buddhaya. They think they are liberated. Vimuktamaninas. It's all in the mind. But because of unclean intelligence, avishuddha buddhi, they don't actually achieve the supreme destination. They can't have any permanent position because they haven't taken shelter at Krishna's lotus feet. Therefore, in spite of performing so many severe austerities and penances to rise up, aruya kritshena param param tada, what happens? Patantyado nadrita yusmarangriya. Down they fall from their imaginary liberated position. Real liberation means you don't fall. So it's imaginary. Lord Chaitanya said that the Mayavadis, that means those who deny Krishna's personal existence, they are the greatest offenders. There's no question of their attaining liberation. Anything else? Yes. Kama, Savakama, Moksha Kama. All right, he's asking that we're speaking about selfless service to the Lord. But in Bhagavatam, he's quoting Shukadeva Goswami, who says, Akamo Savakama Va Moksha Kama Vidara Ji Tivrena Bhakti Yogena. Whether you're Akama, free from material desires, Savakama, full of material desires, or Moksha Kama, you're lusty for liberation, regardless, take up Bhakti Yoga. Well, isn't that our policy here? How many of you walked in the door thinking, nothing for me, everything for Krishna? You? Nothing? Oh, you thought like that? You wanted a nice husband. So, the point is, Shukadeva Goswami is saying, if you have desires or not for yourself, don't worry. Just take up devotional service. Because in the process of devotional service, you'll become purified. What did I think? I thought, well, I've got to have the best pleasure for me. Therefore, I should serve Krishna. That's what I was thinking. Still, tivrena bhakti yogena, perform devotional service with great determination. It's not that we have a big sign outside the door there. If you've got desires for anything except Krishna's pleasure, don't come in the door. There'll be nobody here. Anything else? That is karma yoga. There is a subtle difference between karma yoga and full bhakti yoga. Karma yoga means I will give the results to Krishna, but I'm attached to acting in a certain way. Full-blown bhakti yoga means I'm not attached to the results or what I do. So we're not going to criticize persons who have karma yoga motives. Still, we should understand there's a subtle difference. As you become more advanced, the karma yoga fades a bit and you begin to get glimpses of pure bhakti. Whatever Krishna wants, when Krishna wants it, how Krishna wants it. But we're not going to go around and have an inquisition, you know, for anyone who's got karma yoga, you know, motivations. Oh, you're giving all your sankirtan results to Krishna, but besides that, you also like doing Sankirtan, so therefore... Archita, he's taking videos for Krishna, but actually, you know, it's his own, it's his personal hobby. He gets off on it, so he can't do it. No, we're not going to do that. So Prabhupada explained that there's a subtle difference between karma yoga and bhakti. We're not going to go to war on these subtleties. By trying to do something for Krishna gradually, you'll see more and more how you can be more selfless. Yes. Yes. On that high level of bhakti, there is reciprocation in that Krishna will listen to his pure devotees' plans. But before we get to that stage, we should rise from the sadhana bhakti to the raganuga bhakti platform. On the raganuga bhakti platform, Krishna trusts you a bit, so you can feel like wanting to do something for Krishna. So you have to understand what Prabhupada meant when he said that. I've done what my Guru Maharaj asked, and now I want to do something more. He wants to do something more. He wants to give more pleasure to Krishna, not that he wants to fulfill his own desires. This is the mistake, and often when devotees repeat that example, it's not that, okay, I finally satisfied Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, I've got him off my back, now it's time for my career aspirations. It's not like that. In other words, he said that statement in the mood of increase. I've done what my Guru Maharaj asked me. Now I want to do even more for him and Krishna. That is the mood. I want to go beyond. So first let us go up to the level in which we have satisfied what we've been asked. We have satisfied what has been requested of us. For most of us, that'll take a lifetime. Anything else? Hare Krishna, all glories. Thank you.